Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
The European tours have been made and it's derbies galore. The Diego Costa derby, the Neymar derby and yes, the David Moyes derby. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Tuesday the 15th of December. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Luke Moore.
Such a relief to pronounce David Moyes correctly.
Yes, as he was named when he was born, David. And it will be David.
Mm-hmm. Whenever it comes up on that auto cue at Sky, I just think, don't get it wrong.
Yeah.
Don't. You know how it's pronounced.
When do you
it's
think...
like David Ginola. No.
Yeah. No, it's wrong.
It's David Moyes, isn't it?
Moyes, correct
pronunciation.
When do you think David Moyes, aka the ferryman, is going to start getting credit? Because he got absolute pelters on this show for a long time, mostly at the hands of Jim Campbell. Mm-hmm. But he's starting to do okay now.
He is doing okay, yeah. And we'll credit where it's due. He's doing all right. It's funnier when he isn't.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Why do you hate David Moyes, Jim?
I don't hate him. He just looks like a ghost.
Because he refused a crisp.
Oh, he did, didn't he?
Yeah.
Wait, I don't remember this.
In the stands when he was out in Spain, someone offered him a crisp. Or as they call him in Spain, I don't know, patatas fritas.
Yeah.
And maybe he knew about COVID, like, ahead of time.
He's way ahead of that.
Yeah, I know, but...
way ahead of that.
David Moyes managing Sociedad. What an innocent time.
Yeah.
We had an email. It's not Real Sociedad. It's not Sociedad. It's never just Sociedad. But I don't know what's short for it then.
Okay.
Real Sociedad, always.
Real Sausage.
Saucy son.
Real sausage.
I don't know. Maybe it's just not allowed to be short. Anyway, the draws have happened. Yes, we now know who is going to be facing whom in the next round of both Champions League and Europa League. And the tastiest one, would it be fair to say, is Chelsea against Atletico?
I think it's definitely, it's a great draw, first and foremost. Yeah. When I looked down the draw yesterday, I thought, do you know what? Every single one of those ties is decent, in my own personal opinion.
It's wheat heavy, isn't it?
I think so, yeah, absolutely.
All the chaff's gone down into the Europa League.
Definitely.
No chaff has snuck through.
No, and some chaff was already in the Europa League, yeah. Wasn't it?
For now.
Are they still in it?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That's really good, guys.
Yeah.
That's really good. Anyway, sorry, Luke.
So are Spurs.
Yeah.
I suppose the reason behind your question, if I may interpret it this way, is that it will be a really good test for Frank Lampard's Chelsea. Obviously, yeah. Chelsea have answered some of the critics, some of whom are in this room, from the start of the season about what they can do and what they're capable of, particularly defensively. And now they're going up against basically a team of absolute shit with a end-of-level boss in terms instead of a manager.
Yeah.
He even dresses like an end-of-level boss
completely.
Streets of Rage 2 on the Sega Master System. I'll tell you later, Kate.
Thank you.
Mega Drive, I believe.
I had it on Game Gear, actually.
Could you get it on the Master System?
I had it on Game Gear. You're probably right about Mega Drive. I had it on Game Gear, though, 100%. Mm.
This is kind of like the reverse of when you go... I used to like go to old people's homes and chat to them, you know, back in school, you'd do your community service.
What, they play Streets of Rage?
They go, they go off on one of our EastEnders or whatever, and you just sort of sit there waiting for them to tire themselves out. That's kind of my approach to this.
Where Luke and I grew up, it was a lot like the game Streets of Rage.
Yeah. What did you say, Jim? Endlessly fighting people with the same haircut?
Yeah, which is people that essentially look like exactly the same man trying to fight you.
Yeah.
And there's a chicken on the floor and that.
Speaking of that, yesterday you referenced a friend's dad who was only known by the name Wild Kev.
Yes, Wild Kev. Yes.
And when I was as a listener,
I wanted to know more.
I did as well. So can you fill the gaps in a little bit?
Yeah. So they're my friends Brett and Ryan. They're two brothers. They're both punks, like proper skate punks. Love it. Even now, they're now sort of skate punk dads.
Yeah. Okay.
They're really, really positive people. They're both from East Ham. And they just always refer to their dad as Wild Kev. They're a really close-knit family.
Do you know Wild Kev?
I've met Wild Kev, yeah. He's not like a psychopath. He's just a nice dad.
Is it due to a specific incident?
No idea.
That he got it?
It might be ironic.
I think it may have been, and I think it's just his name now. I think they
sure it's not Mild Kev?
No, it's definitely Wild Kev.
What do you think, and so taking it back to football, what do you think Diego Simeone would do if his daughter or one of his kids or whatever brought back a boyfriend who was a skate punk?
I think he would simmer.
Yeah.
He would simmer, but at the same time, I think he would just go back to his like tactics board and probably not be that bothered. I think he's quite focused, isn't he, on getting the absolute best and worst out of Atletico at all times. It's going to be a test for Frank Lampard.
Wait, I misheard that. Did you say Simeone or Costa?
Simeone.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. I was just imagining Costa. What would he do if someone brought back...
I don't think, despite appearances, I don't think Diego Costa's old enough
to have
a kid who's going to bring a boyfriend back.
I don't know.
I think he's only about 30, Diego Costa.
You can start. Okay, that would be very young.
Yeah. I understand, Kate, that it's physiologically possible. I'm just saying it's probably less than likely.
Very unlikely.
But we don't talk about European football much on this show. Obviously, we have On the Continent, which comes out every Thursday, which people listen to. But Atletico Madrid, it is worth pointing out, have conceded 4 league goals this season. Just 4. Okay. And they're second in the table with 2 games in hand over Real Sociedad, who, you know, we may come on to in a minute. But
but the table is bullshit as well, isn't it? Because Real Madrid are third in the table, 3 points behind, is it? And they've got 1 game in hand over Real Sociedad.
Yeah.
So effectively, they're all in basically the same sort of place. If they played all the games, assuming Atletico Madrid had won them, they'd be 3 points clear.
No, Atletico Madrid have got 2 games in hand over.
Yeah.
They'd be 6 points clear, wouldn't they?
Sorry, 3 points clear of Real Madrid.
They are currently 3 points clear of Real Madrid.
Okay, so fine.
We could do these maths all day, Baldwin, if you want. I don't mind.
I was about to be a big story about how the tables are fucking irrelevant, but I see what I've done
Spurs
there.
Are sitting at the top of
I've just,
one.
Yeah, kind of. I've just proved that actually the tables are totally relevant. I sound completely corrected. I apologise, Luke. What point were you trying to make?
Your abacus has failed.
I just wanted to make a point that it's a real test for Lampard. I'm sure he'll relish it because he appears to be a real learner and someone who likes to improve as he goes on. Clearly, he's improved a great deal since he started managing, if this season's evidence is to be believed. And, you know, despite some of the chat that's been about how it's such an odd season, it's it's difficult to read much into it. You could easily just argue, well, this season's going to be about the manager and the team who most deal with the challenges successfully. You know, and so far, I think Chelsea have been okay.
Do you think, I mean, there's a lot been said about how Chelsea haven't necessarily been at their best against teams in the top half of the table. How defensively they are perhaps still a little bit shaky. I mean, obviously, we look at Simeone as a bit of a tactical pragmatist, but essentially, most of the time they have a game plan they stick to, which he will adjust for certain opponents. But do you think Atletico will do anything that we wouldn't expect them to do against Chelsea? I think it would be very much a case of them inviting Chelsea to break them down and then seeing whether they've got what it takes to do that.
Yeah, I understand the point. I think that they'll probably just bat themselves, won't they, Atletico? They'll bat themselves and say, this is how we play and this is how we're going to do it. And I just think it presents a number of challenges for Frank Lampard's Chelsea. And I think although they've started conceding goals again to a small degree, they are still defensively decent, aren't they, Chelsea? Mm. I mean, it's not like they're not like a disaster defensively.
No.
But the thing you're referring to there is the fact that they haven't beaten anyone in the top half this season, I think, or something like that anyway. They haven't picked up a win against a top 10 team or whatever the stat is, which is quite interesting in itself.
Mm. Yeah, but with the table that we're not looking at, flatter than it has been in previous seasons. Some of these, you know, your wins and your draws are a bit more equal, perhaps, than they have been previously.
Yeah, I see what you mean. And it is also worth pointing out that Atletico are going forward are more impressive than they have been in recent years. I'm not a Spanish football expert by any means, but just on the goal score column, they're scoring goals more than you otherwise would expect from this team that apparently they're like. So players like João Felix, being lively and so it's a difficult challenge for Chelsea, but you'd expect that because it's the knockout stage of the Champions League. So Yeah,
I mean, and Frank Lampard said, people will say, in fact, that it's the toughest draw that we could have had when you go on current form. But of course, these games aren't being played until the new year. Current form is kind of, I suppose that was the point I was trying to make about the table. However, maybe the point is experience of that team. You know, this is a wily lot led by a wily manager against a Chelsea side that is still finding their form. Mm. And their process.
Because I've got such a new manager. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly right. And perhaps if they did need a bit more experience, Chelsea, it turns out they might be able to summon a former great of their team into interaction, as indeed they did last night.
With Danny Drinkwater.
Yeah. That was amazing.
Absolutely unbelievable.
Given that there's no fans, I mean, I know we've got some stadiums with fans at the moment, but I mean, given there's no fans generally, I think I'd rather just watch reserve football.
Yeah. It looked amazing. Like. Do you know, I don't watch a lot of reserve football, but it's not normally like that.
Because,
it's youngsters and they're all green and keen and trying to, show that they're good professionals. Yeah. And then you've got Alfie Devine just like trying to beat up. Well, no, actually, sorry. He just made a quite, what would you call
he
it? A disrespectful challenge.
It was disrespectful. On straight red karate kick.
Mainly he was showing who's boss in that. I'm boss, Danny Drinkwater.
So for those who haven't seen it, I mean, it was mentioned brief on the show yesterday, but it happened last night.
In preview.
We previewed
the under 23s, of course.
Yeah. And incredibly, it didn't disappoint.
That's the kind of football podcast you're listening to, guys.
So Chelsea drew, was it, they drew 2-2 with Spurs?
Yeah.
In an under 23s game. I guess, I suppose it's what some people would term reserve football or whatever. But it is a combination of young players coming through trying to make their name and players working their way back from injury and all that type of stuff. Hence Danny Drinkwater playing. I suppose Danny Drinkwater might just be playing to get a game. I'm not really sure what his recent injury record has been like, but he's obviously been nowhere near the Chelsea team and spent some time out on loan.
Well, he could get quite injured if he keeps getting tackled.
Well, and that's the thing. So, people, the general angle has been, so what happens at one point in the game, Alfie Devine
just
puts a tackle in from miles out. It's one of the worst tackles you'll ever see. Yeah. Two-footed, a terrible, terrible tackle on someone who's had injury problems in the past.
Yeah.
So you understand why Danny Drinkwater's pissed off.
However,
to go in for a full-on fight with a 16-year-old, that's the kind of stuff Wild Kev would do.
Yeah. I don't think Drinkwater's gone in hard enough there.
Stop the disrespect
from that young man.
Yeah.
Outrageous. 16 years old. He's gone to his mates.
But you should be. You're
a
Premier League winner.
Danny Drinkwater out.
Danny, you're a Premier League winner. You should be able to take that sort of shit. No one should be able to disrespect you once you've reached this stage in your career. And I guess that's probably the problem for Danny Drinkwater.
He's hypothetically a better man than I am then, because I'd have been absolutely fuming.
Mate, he tried to plant one, I don't know the terminology. He did really bad fighting.
Yeah. So there's a lot of pressure on this. Attention on this game already because Czech's playing.
Sorry, I didn't even mention
even
that.
More like
took Czech about 15 minutes to get to the fight.
He doesn't look like he's got both legs anymore.
No, he doesn't.
He's only 38, which isn't traditionally that old for a keeper. I know goalkeepers have got a lot younger more recently, but I mean,
yes, 38-year-olds are really young, Luke.
I think if you looked at if you looked over the years, Jim, you'd agree with this, wouldn't you? Like 38 isn't massively old for a goalkeeper.
I mean, there are goalkeepers still playing at that age.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say that I disagree slightly with you, Kate, because I feel like, you know, there are certain types of challenges in football at whatever level you play where I believe you're within your rights to get fucking pissed off about. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the fact that he's gone a little bit late and made a mistake and he's kind of put his hands up and said, sorry, you're too quick for me, whatever. He's purposely tried two-footed at shin high to completely clean him out. And Danny Drinkwater is someone who's got a history of having difficult injuries. And it's his livelihood. So he's going to get pissed off in the heat of the moment. We can't necessarily be too judgmental
about
that.
Also, as well, in the heat of the moment, you don't necessarily go, that kid's 16, there is this factor and there is that factor. You're just pissed off.
No, I would be thinking, he's only 16, I've got a good chance of being able to beat him up.
Yeah. I need a win. This one should
He's a child, we're probably not that evenly matched. Fine. So
Eden Hazard beat up that ball boy. He didn't beat him up, did he?
No.
But, you know.
Little kick.
He's absolutely venerated, that kid.
Davine and Drinkwater were both sent off for that as well.
Oh.
Yeah.
Unjust. Unedifying.
I love the commentary on it as well, because I guess it would have been like, you know, in
Chelsea
club
TV
channel.
Or,
you know, in those sort of gigs that we talked about in the past that you're getting into when you're trying to perhaps break into to commentating, and they just went, oh no. Like, I don't really know what to say about this, and it's not pretty. Anyway, they're both fine.
Yeah, apparently so. I don't know.
Believe.
Yeah, we'll drink water up straight away. I think he's fine.
Us a call, Danny.
Yeah, I think Alfie Devine's probably currently on WhatsApp to his mates, telling them about it. Yeah. I expect
he's probably got a lot of gifts.
He's having a brilliant day.
Oh, no. We don't encourage this.
We don't, but he's 16, isn't he? So he's probably...
He's rash.
...made a name for himself amongst his mates there.
He's probably looking for the Argus catalogue for what he wants for Christmas.
Yeah.
I expect. Looking at one of those scientific calculators for his maths GCSEs.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do when you're 16.
Yeah.
That's what you did when you were 16,
I can't remember,
Kate,
because I'm too old. But back in the day...
Were you having a push pop, watching the Smash Hits poll winners party?
If anyone listening, if you want to explain on Twitter to Kate what the Argus catalogue is.
I know what the Argus catalogue is. They've discontinued it, haven't they?
I know you do, because you've got an Elizabeth Duke ring on at the moment. So
I don't know what that means. I thought they discontinued it because it was too papery. And they're trying to save the planet.
Who's hoping?
But that's an institution of which I have heard. Let's crack on with the rest of the draw for the... Let's stick with the Champions League for starters, okay? So RB Leipzig up against Liverpool. Mönchengladbach are going to be playing City. Two more delicious little contests.
Yeah, Mönchengladbach being in there is very retro. I like that.
Yeah, it is. First time they've made it to the last 16 since 1987.
And they're a team who were absolutely huge in the 70s. One of the biggest teams in Europe in the 70s. UEFA Cup success. Then they got to a European Cup final as well. They're not having a great... season so far domestically, but this season, I mean. But
again, this is this fake table business, isn't it?
Well, yeah, let's not get into that again, Kate, because I think that's a little bit kind of arch, isn't it?
It's the table that we have, isn't it?
It's the only thing we've got to work from.
Well, I don't know, but I don't think that you... Where are they sitting? So they're eighth at the moment in the table. But if you're... It's like saying, City are ninth in the Premier League table. But no one thinks that they're... Well, I mean, they are struggling a bit, bad example, perhaps. But they're only 6 points off the top. And I think Gladbach are what... Okay, my maths has already failed. Today, they are 8 points off the top.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it is a flatter... experience than we've seen in the past, particularly in the Bundesliga.
It is, and I'm sure there's plenty of time for it to shake itself out, if that's what you're kind of referring to. Mm. But it's a fascinating matchup, because Mönchengladbach are an interesting team to watch, and because they've got history at European level. Now, Man City, of course, don't really have any history at European level. Mm. And one thing that is worth kind of remembering is that the entire Pep regime is going to be judged on whether Manchester City have success in the Champions League or not. And This game against Mönchengladbach is coming at an interesting time, because he's signed on this new contract. No one expected him to do it. He's going to have to rebuild the team. There's a lot of areas of the team and a lot of areas of his approach that need to be improved, right? So people are piling... And maybe it's a little bit of a difficult time to talk about this because of how abject they were at the weekend. I mean, That was an absolute shower at the weekend. It was embarrassing. Now, with the obvious caveat that players can be a bit tired and all the rest of it, that game between Man United and Man City was an embarrassment. And to the point it actively pissed me off watching it. And Man City have got a big job on their hands. They look a little bit individualistic now. They look a bit like sometimes they're trying to expect De Bruyne to do something or relying on an individual player to pull something out of the bag. It doesn't seem as systemic. You've got players like Rodri who don't appear to be at the level at the moment. Players like Laporte who've kind of fallen out of favour. So there's a lot riding on this. And I think the two games against Mönchengladbach will be a real litmus test.
Yeah.
Because weirdly in all that, Jim, before I hand over to you, like they've only lost once since the end of September, though, City, so they're not actually losing games.
They just look a bit flatter than we have come to expect from them. But I think the Manchester derby was such a drab game that I think it's almost going to be an anomaly. You know, I don't think we're going to see either team sort of play as badly as that consistently or you know more often than they don't, but I just you wonder with Pep Guardiola in the Champions League if he's just going to overthink it.
Yeah,
you know, like does he
not traditionally now? Yeah. Maybe the next game.
Well, this is it, isn't it? I mean, they'll probably do really really well because he'll play his best team to its strength, and then after that it'll be like, why don't we try a 1-2-8 formation?
Yeah. The exciting one too really here is Leipzig against Liverpool, isn't it? And having seen Leipzig, well, initially absolutely hammer Manchester United, although with the questions about the derby aside, you know, I think that could be, as long as they're not caught being naive, Leipzig, as they slightly were at the end of that game, which of course finished 3-2, they should have a chance to do something against Liverpool. I mean, they seem like a great side.
They're tremendously well coached, and that was the big contradiction or the opposite kind of thing between United and Leipzig. I mean, United's like a bunch of players, and the manager doesn't know his best. I don't think he knows his best team, or he doesn't really. He changes his team a lot, certainly, and it's hard to know what type of football Solskjaer wants to be known for. The opposite to that with Nagelsmann. I mean, they're incredibly well coached. I've seen them in the flesh a couple of times. Been super impressed with them both times I've seen them. And this will be a real test for Liverpool. We don't know what the injury situation is going to be by the time these games are played.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's hard to make a judgment at this stage. Of course.
It's a big test. Really big test.
I mean, it's one of the biggest kind of tests that Nagelsmann can have. So it makes you wonder what he's got in store for his tailor.
What's he going to be wearing?
Yeah, he clearly thinks about these things.
At one point,
he says he asks his colleagues.
Does he?
Yeah. He sometimes brings three outfits and asks his colleagues.
His colleagues don't like him. Like I said on Twitter, last time I saw him on the touchline, he looked like a blind scientist who tried to rebuild Tony Adams from memory.
I think you should support your fellow men in trying to make, in these sorts of positions, trying to make fashion decisions. Because it's something, you guys have been oppressed for so long, in terms of aesthetic
options. Supporting him, we're just taking the piss out of it. How we communicate, isn't it?
In a way, that is for some men, that is how they kind of endorse people. I would be very interested to see what he turns up, because I think for him it's a big occasion.
Yeah.
They're playing against.
So it'll be a suit. It'll be tails.
Tails at the top.
Tails would be amazing.
Yeah. He's going to be dressed like Mr. Micawber.
It's going to be absolutely beautiful. In the Europa League, Manchester United, they're going to be up against Real Sociedad, Arsenal, Benfica.
Cursed teams. That'll be interesting.
Two cursed teams. Absolutely right. That's a great
Arsenal
point.
Bestowed the curse on themselves. It's just a way of doing it.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Will the curse multiply or will it cancel itself out? Who knows? Tottenham, Wolfsburg, Leicester up against Slavia Prague. So all quite delicious, really. Real Sociedad have had a great start to the season. Again, you know, to emphasise, it's obviously these ties have been played in February, so it's a little way to go, and we can see how these things shake themselves out, and perhaps Manchester United will be playing vigorous, exciting football by the time we get there.
Well, I think it's hard at this point to think of a more difficult draw they could have got. I mean, Real Sociedad have been outstanding this season. It's obviously a great little subtext of David Silva playing against Manchester United. He's been really effective for Real Sociedad, of what I've seen. I wouldn't be a huge Spanish football expert, as I've said, but he's been doing very, very well whenever I've seen him. And at the moment, given the situation Man United find themselves in, it's a big test for them. I think could they have got Milan? With the exception of perhaps Milan, I haven't checked whether they could have actually got Milan or not. It's difficult to see a more tough draw they could have got on current form. But Real Sociedad, if they were to drop off domestically and lose their intensity, they wouldn't be the first team of that profile to do that. Yeah. So as you said, Kate, we don't know what's going to happen. But it's a very, very difficult draw for them seen through December eyes.
It's weird. It does seem in these times in particular where there's so much football squeezed into such little time. For some reason, the draw being this far away from the actual games suddenly looks a bit weird. I wonder if you just do it on the day in future.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Just I like a that day a lot. Long or day tournament. Before, maybe.
You're just... definitely going to be at home, so just stay at your home stadium. You are away, so get to the airport departure lounge.
Yeah.
Right? It's like a surprise stag weekend. Yeah. You don't know where you're going.
This is great.
Is it Milan? Is it... Because some of the Europa League, some of the teams, they won't even know where they're going. Mm. Right, you've told one of them a team. Right, now, where am I going?
Yeah, where is that?
I'm actually really inspired by this idea.
It'd be great. Nightmare for Nagelsmann.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, what, picking his outfit?
You have to bring a trunk.
He would.
You have to bring a trunk full of different outfits.
Well, at least it would go with his tail set up, wouldn't it?
Yeah, potentially. Maybe he wouldn't fancy the tails for, like, metalist car Kiev. I don't know.
I'd love to see Nagelsmann go steampunk.
Oh, God, yeah.
It'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Little cogs everywhere. Goggles. Imagine if he turned up at the tunnel dressed like a steampunk.
It'd be brilliant.
Yeah. It'd be amazing.
I mean, let's see what happens after the Christmas break. He might be having had an entire change of heart in terms of his aesthetic.
Just wear shorts and T-shirt.
That's a good idea, actually. That would show you were hard. Yeah. There was a teacher at my school who used to always wear shorts, even on the ski trip.
I know people who wear shorts every single day. It's a big Navy thing, I think.
Is it a statement of how your knees don't get cold? What is the point of it?
Is that a statement anyone needs to make?
Yeah, it's like, I'm so hard, I don't feel cold.
I'll tell you something now. If you went down to Portsmouth and you walked around there, when, in normal times, obviously, when all the shops are open, you'll find a lot of blokes between 20 and 50 in shorts all year.
Strange. But is it about being hot? Is that the idea?
I don't know. I'm not really sure, to be honest. I mean, I'm not hard, so it's hard for me to say.
Yeah. I'm and you are wearing full trousers today.
I am. Full length trousers. Yeah. I'm out of a short trousers finally. Yeah.
Yeah. With one bottom half of one leg missing.
I'm not wearing plus fours, Kate.
Not today.
No.
Not like last week. Bloody hell. You can't see it on the little camera, but...
No.
It's his little
secret. If you judged it on these cameras, you'd be like a newsreader. You could wear whatever you want on the bottom half.
Yeah, guilty. Yeah,
like Jim.
Yeah. Or Kate on Sky Sports News. Who knows what she's wearing under there?
I am always wearing very formal attire. Let's get to a break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
This week on Stakhanov. Between the Lines with Melissa Reddy releases a brand new episode exploring the hot topic of head injuries in football. As well as exploring the sport's link with dementia with neuropathologist Dr. Willie Stewart, Melissa spoke to ex-Tottenham star Ryan Mason, who was forced to retire after a devastating head injury aged 26.
I couldn't look at light. I was sleeping for like 20 hours a day. I couldn't really hold a conversation. Like I say, when the brain gets an injury, the body almost just instinctively responds and it almost just shuts everything else down.
Meanwhile, self-care club Wellness Road Tested have launched a brand new epilogue show. Join Lauren and Nicole every Friday where they'll be hearing about your experiences, talking to the experts and reading the very best wellness literature in the self-care book club.
I think it's a totally life-changing book for sisterhood and womankind. It's revolutionary in how to adopt self-love and live for who you are.
Search Between the Lines and Self-Care Club on your favourite podcast player.
All that and more at Stakhanov.
Get in somebody's face. Smash somebody.
Oh.
Yeah. I agree with Keane.
I do not agree with Keane.
I agree with him.
That's what was going through Danny Drinkwater's
head. Danny Drinkwater's methodology. Yeah. Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Don't do that. Don't listen to Roy Keane. Apart from for your own pleasant enjoyment of a Sunday afternoon like me, like your wife does.
Yeah, she does. My wife loves Roy Keane.
She loves him. Yeah. She loves him.
Hello, Sandip Mann has been in touch and he says, on the subject of dads and football, I have a life lesson for you. My dad absolutely despises football, so I would never go to him with any football related emotions.
What is this?
Yeah.
I am an Arsenal victim and when Cesc Fabregas left, I was distraught. When my dad said I had a face like a smacked ass, I explained that my favourite player had left and I was upset. Without batting an eye, my dad said, son, did you know that if you died right now, this Cesc fella would literally have no idea. I think of this often when getting upset about matters out of my control, and it's really stuck with me. Hopefully that helps.
Does that help,
that is fantastic.
Jim?
It does, yeah.
That's less an email.
I'm over Cesc now.
That's more a opening salvo in a start of a support group for Arsenal supporters.
Yeah,
right?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Or something like Jordan Peterson says in his sleep.
Yeah,
like,
basically, yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah, we haven't got time for that now.
No,
yeah.
We really definitely don't have time for that guy.
Matthew Carlton has also sent us an email. He says, hello, Ramblers. As Christmas looms closer, I thought I'd share this story in the glimmer of hope that I can claw back some commission from a Premier League transfer that happened 17 years ago.
Hope springs eternal, mate.
It does. When I was 11 years old, I had a season ticket for Blackburn Rovers around the time Graham Souness was manager. I was a football-obsessed kid, but the weirdly obsessed type who would need to know about everything going on in the game. After reading an article on Europe's hottest unknown talents in a well-known football magazine once, I started an interest in final winger Brett Emerton. I'm not quite sure why I started to do my own mini scout of Brett Emerton. Maybe it's because he had a cool curtain haircut at the time, but it spurred me on to write to my football club in an attempt to persuade him to sign him. Several weeks later, I received a nice reply from the chief scout of Blackburn Rovers, acknowledging that Brett Emerton was a very talented player and that my observations of the player were very accurate. Fast forward 12 months, it pops up on my breaking news screen that Blackburn Rovers have signed who else but the mighty Australian himself, Brett Emerton.
No!
Now, I'm not saying I'm the reason as to why Blackburn Rovers signed Brett Emerton, but how many 11-year-old kids would be writing into their football club to sign a final winger when they could write in and try and bag Thierry Henry? I'm just wondering what the opinions of the Ramblers are on if I have a case here to fight for credit on the Brett Emerton transfer saga. Attached is proof of the letter sent back to me from the chief scout. Unfortunately, there is no date attached, but you can clearly see that it states Brett Emerton is a final player at the time of writing. Thank you very much for that, Matthew, but I think you may need help.
Do you remember that guy, Ashwin Raman, that we talked about the other day? The 17-year-old guy based in India who is a scout, who has literally pretty much done what this guy did. Yeah. And then they were like, hey, have a job at Dundee United. I think this guy is a genius. He was just ahead of his time when the internet was good.
I think
bad,
you are going to send... you're going to send an email... What, 2003? It existed then. If you're going to send an email...
I was still on my abacus.
...that features Brett Emerton seven times...
Yeah.
you're going to get a certain amount of pushback is what I'm
going
to say.
I think going against his case is the line after reading an article on Europe's hottest unknown talents in a well-known football magazine.
It's a shame
does
that.
Imply that perhaps yeah. Brett Emerton would be someone that teams are aware of.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time,
he
you know, the facts speak for themselves, right? He recommended him and they did sign him.
It's
so
an amazing coincidence.
I guess we'll never know. But
yeah. And they, yeah, and they definitely did acknowledge it per the...
I mean, he's attached to proof.
A message back, exactly.
He's attached to proof, to be fair. So, I mean, who are we to judge? I mean, it is worth probably pointing out that Brett Emerton was played for fucking ages as well. He was there for like 8 seasons.
So that's a brilliant signing.
They should be naming a stand after Matthew Carlton. I mean, for goodness sake.
Matthew Carlton, was this... I mean, it suggests... This email suggests that this was his hit rate of one.
Yeah,
out
what
of
about
every
all the others 10, he sent in?
10,000 emails.
What about all the others he sent in?
Who were the people? We want to know who the people you emailed about who didn't get signed.
I would love
next
it if,
time, Matthew, please.
I would love it if Matthew had sent in like 15 letters before that, all with players who are completely shit. And what? They just went, oh, no, we're not doing this.
Given that he's so committed to all of this and to the annals of footballing history, I think 15 is probably a conservative estimate.
I mean, it's also as well, this was 17 years ago. So this is when managers had a lot more control over transfers. So this does imply that Graham Souness is taking scouting tips from 11-year-olds via letter.
Yeah, it's possible.
Seems unlikely.
He was probably fuming because at that time he had just seen an 8-year-old Paul Pogba for the first time. And I was like, he'd see like a chilling portent of what was to come.
I like that a lot. Show at footballramble.com or tweet us at footballramble like Sandeep did, like Matthew did. Thank you so much for getting in touch, guys. We love to hear from you. Now, a bit of sad news yesterday about Gerard Houllier, who has sadly died at the age of 73 after a heart operation. Former Liverpool, France, Lyon, PSG and Aston Villa manager. Of course, I've heard hundreds of tributes to Houllier over the past 24 hours, many from Liverpool fans who've, you know, who've actually come to credit him with setting them on a path that would lead to their current success, particularly given that he restored them to the Champions League that they would then go on and win. And of course, venerating him for completing that cup treble. He also put his body on the line when he had heart surgery after he fell ill in that game against Leeds in October, well, it was late in 2001. And then famously, one of people's favourite memories, I think, has been of him turning up to that Champions League, back when there was a second group phase in the Champions League in 2002, and Liverpool needed a 2-0 win against Roma to qualify for the quarterfinals. And he, looking very frail, having had that heart surgery, he turned up on the sidelines and... Who's it? Rafa Benitez, managing Roma, said, I knew then that you would win.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so there was this like roar from Anfield, his return there, because he'd obviously had such a serious heart operation.
There's a lovely piece from Phil Thompson in The Guardian about him and their relationship and the type of person he was and the influence he had at Liverpool. And Thompson makes the point as well. I mean, when they won that UEFA Cup, when they won that treble, he talks a lot about how he's like, look, this is great. With each stage of it, he's like, you can't celebrate. This is really, really great, but you've got to stay on track. And I mean, I think there'd been a culture at Liverpool where they'd maybe standards had slipped a little bit, almost. Thompson said they were playing five-a-side in training and they just weren't at the level where they could be that complacent. So
a lot of people were comparing him to Wenger in the way that he came in and changed the diet and the culture in the dressing room. Sorry, it was Fabio Capello, not Rafa Benitez.
Weirdly, I know what you meant.
Yeah.
Benitez would have been at Valencia then. I think one of the things that's come out since his sad passing is not just some of the stuff you guys have talked about, which is, you know, what he was able to achieve as a manager and how much football, whether it be at Liverpool or at France, owes to him as a football manager and a thinker, but the kind of man he clearly was as well. You know, friends from all over the game. I mean, Sir Alex Ferguson coming out and saying, you know, how much of a friend he was. And I've interviewed several players, I think, that have played under him. Off the top of my head, I've interviewed Chris Kirkland, Jamie Carragher, Danny Murphy. And they're all pretty united in what they said about him. And it's well worth going and listen back if you haven't already at some of those Ramble Meets episodes, because what he was able to impart upon these players in terms of what was expected of them as human beings and how they could think about the game differently, it's actually pretty interesting. But what really shone through was just the kind of human being he clearly was. And so he's a big loss to the game generally because of, like I say, because of what he was able to achieve within it. But also as a kind of elder statesman of the game, I mean, being involved in a technical capacity in all these different ways. But just the type of human being he was as well. Everyone seemed to think he was, you know, one of the nicest guys around, a very personable person, a very, you know, easy guy to get on with, a classy, honourable man. And so it's sad for that reason as well.
A lot of people talked about his generosity as well. He actually spoke about a bit about it more recently in a documentary he did, I think, back in 2018. But this idea that, yeah, like generosity, you'll never regret being a generous person. And I can't remember who it was I was talking to who said that, yeah, it was almost to the extreme of like, you know, no, Gerard, like you've done enough for me. Like that's fine. Yeah, thank you. But that's more than enough. You've done enough.
And if you want to stick to the, if you wanted to stick to the football side, you could say that from memory, that 2001 Cup treble, all those finals were really interesting because the FA Cup final was the Michael Owen one, right? Yeah. Where Arsenal dominate the entire game and then Liverpool bounce back and score two very late on. The League Cup final, I was living with a Birmingham fan and they beat Birmingham on penalties and that was a really interesting game. And then the UEFA Cup final was absolutely unreal. It was one of the most ridiculous finals I've ever seen. And they win 5-4 with a golden goal. My memory is Jordi Cruyff playing for Alaves at the time.
Yeah.
And so... Not, you know when a club the size of Liverpool, it's not an over-exaggeration across a broad period of time to say they win trophies all the time. Compared to any other team, they win trophies all the time. So for those finals to stick in the memory so much means they have a reason why people have an affinity with them. And the fans clearly have an affinity with Julier, have an affinity with that season particularly. And so it cuts deep for them as well. And all the tributes that have come out from the players since kind of speak for themselves, really.
In that season, after the UEFA Cup final, they still had to qualify for the Champions League. So they still had to sort of keep a lid on it and go and get a result against Charlton, which they then later did. So it was a hell of a season.
Yeah, it was an incredible season. And actually, when at that point when he came in, they hadn't won anything for 8 years, which is
for Liverpool, that's crazy.
Comparable drought. To some of their longest, well, all right, not the most recent one, but it was a big drought at that stage in their career. I'd actually forgotten as well, though, there are all sorts of other legs, because he's obviously a man of steel, it seems like, Gerard Houllier, because he's got these great qualities of, like, you know, being really clear about what sort of person you should be. But I'd forgotten that, of course, he was the France manager when they didn't qualify for the 1994 World Cup, and he called Damajina a criminal. Do you remember for losing the ball in the game against Bulgaria, I want to say, that then knocks them out of qualifying and they didn't make it through. So it's clear that he's got some real, like, he just was absolutely, I know we say this a lot, but he was just absolutely obsessed with the game and with trying to create this football that would take all the teams that he managed to the next level. And I don't know, it's just been really... I think when there's a big death, you know, we obviously were on the show when after Diego Maradona died, which was another level. But the thing about football coming together when there are these kind of significant deaths is actually, I think, one of the really lovely, like, community things about it. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I do think that. And I think just to going back to Julien in terms of what he did at France, after he manages France and they don't qualify, he then goes and takes a job in a technical capacity with the youth team, the academy teams, the under 20s and the under 18s, and set a lot of the foundation for France to go on and be successful in 98 and 2000. So, yeah, look, you can always judge how widely someone's respected by the amount of names and the different types of names that come out after someone passes away. And the last 24 hours, as you've alluded to, Kate, has been an onslaught. It's been an absolute onslaught. And I did enjoy Danny Murphy, actually, particularly. He gave a very touching tribute on the radio yesterday in tears. Clearly someone who meant a great deal to him, saying that, you know, it was funny because the type of man he was, he couldn't kick a ball straight. Like, he wasn't very good at football at all. And he would talk to us about what he wanted us to do. And then he would try and show us. And we'd all be like laughing, like cracking up, rolling around laughing about how bad he was as a player. But he would never take it personally. And it's a measure of the manager he was that as soon as we got into a room to do a presentation or he could hold a room or give a team talk, everyone was in silence, rapt listening to him because his ability to get ideas across in a second language, his ability to understand the game at such a deep level was a huge part of how we were able to achieve what we were able to achieve. So, you know, clearly he's someone with a great sense of humour as well, and someone who, you know, saw the game in the right way and saw it, took it in the right spirit.
And he came from that teaching background, I think, which is really significant when he's talking about, or when all of these people are talking about him. It just seems as though that kind of strength of character and the style, the approach he took, the kind of nurturing approach he took. You mentioned Danny Murphy. That was such a lovely tribute. Also Jamie Carragher, he sounded absolutely devastated by the loss as well, and he said that Gerrard changed me as a person and as a player, and of course got Liverpool back to winning trophies.
And what have they done since? That's what I want to know.
Impossible to get through it without a dig.
I'm Liverpool obviously being dig. Sarcastic. They're a fantastic team.
It was very sad news yesterday, but lovely to hear some of the things that people have had to say.
Absolutely.
About Gerard Houllier. Football is back tonight. We had a small respite.
Finally!
To watch
the under-20s. I've watched Liverpool for ages. Yeah. Now, I thought it was disappear for good.
The thing is, they give these lads too much time off, don't they? Yeah, I feel like we should squeeze
for
in a few more.
For the bloody money they earn.
I'm not being funny, but we almost went 48 hours without a top flight game. For goodness sake.
Oh, God, I don't know what to do with myself. What did you guys get up to last night?
Just watch reruns of the game at the weekend.
Yeah, that's
I just laid face down on my bed trying not to think. Yeah. What's the point when there's no games?
Didn't you squeeze in a pub trip before? Closed down. Yeah, exactly.
Oh man, don't talk to me about
that. But there are some games tonight. I mean, obviously, Man City. We've mentioned they should. You'd fancy them to get through, get past West Brom pretty easily. But Wolves Chelsea is an interesting one.
Yeah, isn't it?
Very interesting game. Excited for that one.
And Chelsea off the back of that defeat to Everton. Yeah, and Wolves. I feel like they are coming to a stage where they might be in dangerous territory if they. I don't know. Their team that was so solid last season and had such an identity to it, you know, they've obviously had some dreadful injuries, but they, including Raul Jimenez.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But this is a big game for both teams.
100%. If Wolves lose tonight, they've lost three in a row, then they go to Burnley away next. And then you've got this Christmas period where there's obviously a crazy amount of games. I think after this game against Chelsea tonight, they like I said, they go to Burnley, and I think they play four games in 10 days, something like that. It's a lot of games to get through.
Not for Wolves.
Maybe that's the issue. Yeah. They're not playing enough football.
Traditionally, they might be all right.
They're dropping off because they're just, you know, they're not playing enough.
Yeah. Burnley are a very difficult team to play, Jim.
They weren't traditionally, from where I was sat. But
can I just say, I really enjoyed you talking about Arsenal yesterday.
Thanks, mate.
I just enjoy. And there's loads of people out there who won't admit this, but other people's misfortune around football does always make me feel like a lot better. And I like it when Jim gets to the rung on the ladder as an Arsenal fan, where it's like he's just before he's so exasperated, he's got nothing to say. That's
thinking,
the sweet spot you want.
You keep thinking, we've been doing the show since 2007, and I keep thinking like they embarrass themselves and me to a point where it can't get worse. And they keep drilling down below the bottom of the barrel.
This isn't below, is it? Is this as low as we feel? You won the FA Cup 5 minutes ago.
We're talking about now, aren't we?
Wanker.
Bloody hell!
She can't even swear properly. She's so
there, didn't it?
She's so posh. She can't even swear properly.
I just called you a wanker.
You did. An entitled wanker.
You're right what you said about
The irony of that.
Yeah, indeed.
Me sitting here calling you that.
Anyway, before we have to actually leave this studio, the one thing you'd say you're right about, Jim, is the fact that Arsenal, every game looks like a loss to them at the moment. It's hard to see where points or 3 points are coming from. And again, just to reiterate, I think it's bloody marvellous.
Southampton at home tomorrow.
Yeah.
That screams Theo Walcott hat-trick or something.
I'm sure the guys will cover it. I'm sure they'll cover it tomorrow.
I'm actually getting a bit of an idea for a Patreon-themed episode here, Jim, because I just want to let you guys know, if you want even more of Jim's pain, perhaps, then do head over to the Football Ramble Patreon, where you will find an absolute treasure trove of delights, a weekly bonus Ramble On episode featuring pretty glorious nonsense, to be honest. Fantasy football dinner parties, fantasy football careers, access to the Discord as well is something else you get with Patreon subscription. You can chat to us if you want, and also to fellow listeners about all things football. It costs just $5 a month. So yes, head over to patreon.com/footballramble to find out more, and we'll be there waiting for you.
Yeah. Don't say that in a sinister way like that, though. It's all right for you to say that. If I say, we'll be there waiting for you.
Waiting for you.
It sounds like it was the whisper, wasn't it?
Taste the rainbow.
Me and Wild Kev waiting for you.
Wild and mild.
Jim and Hated Martin waiting for you.
Yeah, that was another one.
Jim knows someone called Hated Martin.
I only met him once. He told
and you hated him.
Honestly, he was a real dickhead as well. Like it came across really quickly.
What did he do to you?
He said that he felt it should be legal to kill people if you could later prove they were idiots. I was like, you would not do well out of that, Hated Martin.
That's probably why you only met him.
Why you've got this nickname?
Was there a high proof of idiocy?
Was there? I didn't really want to talk to him, so I didn't get into too much.
It might have been an absolutely brilliant idea, Jim, and you missed the chance to work it all out. Marcus, Pete, and Andy are going to be perhaps working this out tomorrow instead. Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye, and reminder that Jim is back on Thursday after Arsenal play.
That's amazing.
So tune in for that one.
Are you organising that? Is this a self-flagellation thing,
Jim?
It's
nothing to do with me.
Is this something you need?
I'm sure there are dark forces at work.
Yeah.
Say goodbye. Bye, Jim, in a cheerful voice. Bye, guys. Catch you next time.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.